Let's take a deep dive into Scripture with Father John Wargle and Danny Gallagher. During each episode, we'll be sharing our insights about the Bible passages presented on a related post on Father John's website, ancienthopes.org. To find the post we're discussing, go to the ancienthopes.org website and then find the Deep Dive into Scripture link at the top of the page. Our discussions on this show will follow the posts listed on that page. Here are your hosts for our deep dive into Scripture today, Danny and Father John. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Deep Dive into Scripture podcast and radio show. I'm Danny Gallagher, and I'm here in the studio with Father John Wargle. Welcome back, Father John.
Danny, we're going to have a blast today.
Well, I sure hope so. You know, we're going to talk about something I think that's very holy. So the Holy of Holies.
Yeah.
And it's like the centerpiece of, it's the garden, it's the centerpiece of, you know, in Jewish tradition, it's the core of who God is to them.
That's right. We talked last time about sacred space, and the seventh day, God is said to have sanctified it and made it holy.
Yeah.
Now, I think we need to talk about holy a little bit, because I think a lot of people don't have a clue, an idea, what holy means.
So okay? Sort of the definition of holy?
Yeah. I mean, after all, it's become a pejorative term in our culture, which means it used to have a very positive connotation. Now, it's been made common. Actually, the opposite of holy in Scripture is common.
Wow.
Okay. So, think about how people use the word. Holy cow.
Yeah.
What's a holy cow?
Holy cow.
Holy mackerel. Right. What's a holy mackerel, right? Yeah.
And the other thing about it is that I always feel like if someone is holy in today's culture, then what happens is they become, it's like a negative thing.
That's right. That's right. A holy Joe.
Ah, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or holier than thou.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know that when I was working, I used to walk into a meeting sometimes and people would say, okay, Danny's going to lead us in a prayer
right.
You know, before the meeting at the government facility. And I would just laugh.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And some
yeah.
people thought that was good. You know, I could tell they thought that I was a person that
they
was interested in my
faith.
They had
some respect for the holy, maybe. Right. Yeah, right. Yeah,
exactly. Huh? And some people, it was like a negative thing.
They were, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. So we use it as an adjective for so many things, even profane things, okay? Mm-hmm. So this is the work of the devil, Danny, because what he has done is he robbed our culture of the perhaps the most important theological concept we could have.
Yeah.
Okay. So I like to look at the Old Testament, and this is where we get our idea of the holy, okay? As I said, it's the opposite of common. So it's not like the opposite of holy is unholy, okay?
Uh-huh, right.
It's common. That is, things as they are after the fall.
Okay.
God cannot come in contact with the common because he's pure holiness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have a sense of holiness. It's my belief that everybody really, really, really longs for the holy. Everybody longs for the seventh day. Everybody has this memory of something that was lost.
Right. And they're searching for it inside themselves, but don't even recognize.
Yeah. It. Right, right, right. So I like to think, what are some of your most holy experiences, Danny?
I think that when I was young, I had some incredible holy experiences in the woods out in nature.
Right.
For instance, one of these, we used to build forts all the time when I was, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12,
right.
13
yeah.
years old. And we'd go in the woods, find a deep spot, and we would do different things like build a treehouse or whatever. But my favorite one was this one that was at the base of a very big tree, and we dug an 8-foot deep pit and we covered it over with wood and dirt and stuff. And we dug a tunnel so that you could get into it, slide into this pit. and we had
Good
candles
heavens.
Down there. I'm telling you, it was it
sounds
was,
dangerous it to was, me.
Well, a guy made us fill it in because his kids were going in there.
Right.
So anyway, but
the felon, Danny's gone. No one ever find him.
But it's a place where I felt
right.
very, you know, like it was a sacred space.
That's
I mean,
right.
That's the best
that's
way
right.
I can describe it. Yeah.
So what we do is we sort of, you know, canonize them in our experience. Big moments like marriage and all that stuff, you know. We look back at these experiences and they become special. So here are words that we might use for holy, that which is special, that which is beautiful, that which produces deep longing, okay? Again, it's the uncommon. It's the exceptional. It's the unique.
Mm-hmm.
You put, you know, when say holy, holy, holy about God, he's really saying absolute unique, unique, unique.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not manufactured.
Yeah, right.
So everybody longs for this, okay? And that's what the seventh day experience is in chapter 2. It sort of gives us a window in what the seventh day looked like before the fall.
Uh-huh, sure.
And again, I think it's a common human memory, which we all makes us nostalgic, I think. The whole idea of nostalgia, I think, goes back to the holy, okay?
Sure. So we're longing for places that we remember in our minds that
right.
are those sacred places, the special, the beautiful. You know, I do that in prayer where I'm quieting myself and I'm going back. My mind just takes me there.
Right.
Goes back to a place that I remember, something that I remember, and that helps me move toward God in my
well,
prayer.
Well, that's great, because what you're doing is you're employing your imagination, and we've got to do that, okay? Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do that here, Danny. We're going to use our imagination, and we're just going to enjoy looking at what's around us.
Mm-hmm.
So God planted a garden, okay? He's the first gardener. And I guess you would have to say that gardening is therefore the quintessential activity of humanity. I mean, after all, God created a garden and he gave it over to our first parents to cultivate.
Yep.
Okay.
To tend it. Yeah.
Yeah. To attend it. Right. So we have the garden motif, and this garden is said to be in Eden. It's not the Garden of Eden, okay? It's in Eden. And we know that Eden itself is an elevated place. How do we know that, Danny?
It was because there were rivers there.
That's it.
River ran through it, yeah.
Right. So we imagine Eden as a mountain or elevated place out of which the river of life flowed.
Mm-hmm. So the head of the...
Right, and at the garden itself, it splits into four rivers. And therefore, we know Eden is an elevated place. We'd call it the Mountain of God.
Uh-huh.
It's a temple, okay? It's structured actually like a temple, in a sense. Mm-hmm. You've got the holy place way up where God is, the holy place. And you've got the garden, you know, and the river of life flowing out. And then, and from there, it's flowing out into the whole world, okay?
Yeah.
And that flow is very important because it's suggestive of the fact that humanity was to spread the garden out into the whole world.
Right, yeah.
Okay. The garden right now is a small place. So we have the river motif. The rivers are the Pishon and the Gihon. We're not sure where they are, but... they're associated with the land of Cush, which we know is in Africa.
Okay.
So maybe it was the White and the Blue Niles.
Uh-huh.
They were adventuresome back then. They knew about the Niles, right? Of course they would.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course, yeah.
And then, of course, there's also the river system of the Tigris and Euphrates. Okay.
And those exist today.
Well,
right.
They do, and they all seem to be part of one river system here,
mm-hmm.
as is proposed to us. Now, the Hebrews knew that that wasn't the case back then, and so I think what we're looking at is two giant, massive river systems that culture basically grew out of, and I would think that if I was a Hebrew, I would think that the land right between,
uh-huh.
which is Canaan land,
yeah.
could have been where paradise was. Who knows?
Sure, okay. Yeah. Again, well, it makes sense to them.
Yeah. I don't know if we can take this too literally, uh-huh. right? So we have the bright side of the water motif. We talked about the dark side, the first chapter, where there's the watery deep and God puts boundaries to it. It's a symbol of death. Mm-hmm. So like all motifs, there's a bright side and a dark side. It's all binary. We're going to talk about that in another thing. Okay. Okay. So it's all so fascinating, isn't it?
It is.
Right.
It just goes deeper and deeper. That's the thing that kills me. I think, okay, I think I understand this. And then you say, no, we're going deeper than that.
Right. So rivers. Okay. That's part of this special place. Okay. And you can trace rivers all the way up to the book of Revelation. Okay. So these motifs bind scriptures together for us. We know that in the land of Havilah, where I think the Gihon it was, there's gold.
Uh-huh.
Okay, there's precious stones.
Right.
That's part of paradise.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Why wouldn't it be?
I mean, think about it, you know? What would you do, Danny, if you just saw a big treasure chest and took the lid off, and it's sparkling with diamonds, rubies, and gems and all sorts of gold things.
I'd say this is a sacred place.
No, but the truth of the matter is it does something to us. And how do you explain that?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? How do you explain that? It's an intuitive thing that we know yeah. is valuable and is part of the holy.
Mm.
And why do you think people spend so much money buying these things? Is because what they're trying to do is buy paradise.
Sure. Recreate that feeling or that holiness,
right, yeah.
that sense of, you know, find that
exactly.
sense of longing.
Exactly, right.
You're listening to the Deep Dive into Scripture radio show and podcast with your hosts, Danny Gallagher and Father John Morgel. The text that we're discussing can be found on the AncientHopes.org website, and then select the Deep Dive into Scripture link at the top of that page. Let's get back to our show with Danny and Father John.
And why do you think people spend so much money buying these things? Is because what they're trying to do is buy paradise.
Sure. Recreate that feeling or that holiness,
right, yeah.
that sense of, you know, find that
exactly.
sense of longing.
Exactly, right. So we got gems there. We have dillium, which is a spice.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very sensuous place. And that's a very important thing to know, because all of this material world, this sensory world is good, okay? Because
yeah.
God created it, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, so what else do you see there? Can you think of that when you go through this place?
Oh, gosh, there are trees.
That's right.
So
trees.
Yep, the trees, tree of life, and all the other greenery and things like that God created.
That's right. There's all the garden. There were no weeds in this special place, okay?
Yeah, and so that was true in my garden.
But everything was growing, so that means that Adam and Eve could shape and create. That's so fundamental to who we are, okay? And they wouldn't have to do it by the sweat of their brow. I mean, can you imagine, you know, spending a whole day out there, you know?
And yeah. Well, listen, I love it, and days go by really fast when I spend a lot of time in the garden.
Yeah, but at this age, Danny, you start out there like a kid, right? And then by the end of the day, we're pulling our bag of bones up.
true, right? Big difference.
And you have to take a shower because you're sweating and he's aching and all that sort of thing, you know, right? Yeah. But that wouldn't be the case. This is paradise, Danny.
Yeah.
Think about that, okay?
Yeah.
There's two trees that we know specifically, the tree of life.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they could partake of it assumes that they did.
Sure, yeah.
And so I like to look at this tree sacramentally.
Mm-hmm.
Not a magic tree, okay, where there's some inherent magic in it, but it's something God graced this material thing, this fruit, to perpetuate their life. So the whole idea is that they could live here and partake of this fruit, and they would just continue to live and live and live.
Yeah, wow.
That's
a great image.
That's paradise, right?
Sure.
But there's also another tree, and that's a tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is not a bad tree, Danny. Okay, how do we know it's not a bad tree?
God created it.
Yeah, okay, that's right. And this is called a merism, okay? We have a lot of merisms, heaven and earth. they're polar opposite type things. Okay. So the idea of the knowledge of good and evil would be a comprehensive knowledge of everything. And so we would say that this tree is the tree of all knowledge.
Okay, sure. Good and evil are part of that, but all knowledge would be, yeah.
Right.
More general.
Evil at this point is only a potential. Okay, and a potential would be rebelling against God.
Hmm.
Therefore, they're given a command. So we have law in the garden.
Right. Sure.
So we have law. And we talked about boundaries before. Now mm-hmm. we have a moral boundary. They cannot partake of this. If they do, then they're doing it on their own. That's called autonomy.
Right.
Okay. So that
separating themselves
from God. And everything is binary. We'll talk more about this, but to create an atmosphere of choice, because fundamental to our humanity made in the image of God is our ability to choose.
Yeah.
And if you don't have anything to choose from, then this can never be demonstrated and we can never really grow. Okay.
Yep, of course.
Yeah. So the two trees there, and you might say, we're going to talk about the origin of evil later, but you know, why would God create such a dangerous tree in there? Well, not the tree is all that dangerous in itself. It's the autonomous act. And God never gives us reasons, okay?
Okay.
So he never said, but he did say, if you partake of this, you will surely die. And we'll talk more about that later. But so they had a choice between life and death. Okay, so we have the trees and cultivation and gardening. What else do you see, Danny?
Man and woman.
That's right. And this is the first man and first woman motif. We see this throughout Scripture. First, men are often associated with a new stage of life, okay, where God's going to bless everyone through that first man. And so you'll see it. You'll see it in Noah. You'll see it in Abraham. You'll see it in David. And of course, you see ultimately with Jesus Christ. So it's a first man motif, very important in Scripture. And then with her, Eve, we have the beautiful woman motif.
Mm-hmm.
And since we talked about her being the crown of creation, Danny, you and I will not have any disagreement about this, and that is, there's nothing more beautiful in the whole wide world than a woman and the feminine.
Yep, true.
I can prove it, okay? You look at most women who are in a hair salon and are reading magazines. What other magazines?
All about women.
All beautiful women.
I want to look like that.
Right. We won't talk about what men look at, okay?
Exactly. Quite better not, yeah.
Right. A barber shop, you know what I mean, that type of thing. But for the most part, that's, you know, so the beautiful woman motif, that's got a wonderful bright side throughout Scripture, all the way up to the bride, the church's bride, and you know, but there's also the dark side of that, and we'll certainly talk about that too. They were naked and not be ashamed. Okay, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's part of when I was thinking about this imagery,
right?
I did think about that. You know, that would be so freeing and so You know, it's hard to wrap my mind around not feeling ashamed. You know, but
it's impossible.
Yeah. Okay.
But given our state of what we call concupiscence, but. Mm-hmm. Think about it. They're not babies, because we all know that naked babies are cute, and you know, at least back in the old days, you know, I'm glad my folks lost their film. They had bear rug pictures of me, okay, and then they're lost.
Great. Yeah.
They don't do that sort of thing now because, you know, the culture's so different. Okay. Yeah. But back then, you know, naked babies running around, that was just this cute, you know, and it's beautiful to watch it, right? But the thing here to remember, Danny, is that these were not babies.
Right.
Adam and Eve are not babies. They're innocent like babies. They're naked like babies. But can you imagine being an adult and be so innocent and everything's so pure that, you know, you could go around naked, okay?
And there's no feeling of that.
Lust.
I'm naked. You know?
That's right. And, you know, I think that's... Of course, I never visited a nudist colony, but that's, in my mind, I think that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get back to lost origins, but they can't get there.
Can't do it, no, yeah.
You can't get there, right? So it's something that's lost, okay? And it's very interesting in C.S. Lewis's book on, I think it's The Great the great divorce or something like that. Anyways, the people, the sanctified people are coming. Okay. And he couldn't tell whether they were naked or whether they were robed. Okay. Uh-huh. We know that, well, this thing really develops. Okay. Where we are, those who overcome in Revelation are given a white robe. Okay. Uh-huh. So that means that humanity's matured into adulthood. Okay. Yeah. So the nakedness motif is really, really, really important. Okay. But when you're using your imagination here the best you can, what are you getting? A sense of like, wow, I want to be there, right?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You know, here,
spend my life there and life forever. That's
right. That's right. Thing. So what else do we see here? Are we missing? The first man and first woman, social instincts. Okay. The fact that we are made for communion, and Adam is in what we called original solitude. We'll talk more about that as well. Mm-hmm. But there's a need. Okay. There's animals there, Danny.
Oh yeah. Sure.
Right. It's talking about your animal, your dog.
Right.
Bailey.
Bailey. Yeah.
Right. I mean, you go home. And even your wife doesn't even come near as joyful to see you.
Bailey is ridiculously happy when we walk in the door. She's already there when we're walking
up
the steps.
That's right. But you can't understand. We can't understand ourselves apart from animals.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. There's sort of a wraparound. Okay, where you have God saying to Adam, you know, there's no one for him, and then there's this whole episode of animals and naming them.
Sure, okay? God creates them.
And then we have the creation of Eve. But the important thing is this, is that Adam had a knowledge. Okay, it wasn't like, oh, you know, there's a dog, I'll call it dog or, you know, cat or something like that. You know what I mean? He had insight with original language into the essence of the animal.
Right, so he knew how to name
it. It wasn't
them.
An arbitrary word, you know. Still, look at how God seems to stand by with curiosity about what Adam does and what Adam names them. God knows all things, but he never gives his foreknowledge in a way of his excitement, you know, of what's going on. He's thoroughly into it.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah, seems that way, yeah.
Yeah, he's not bored. Oh, I know, you know.
Whatever.
You call it an elephant. Ah, I knew it. You know, that's the type of thing. Uh-huh. There's a certain freedom there, but there's also a certain knowledge, okay? Before the fall, words meant exactly what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
Language was meant to be that. And actually, the language motif takes us. We'll talk more about the fall, but the fall always to the Tower of Babel. But a proof of that, words are just arbitrary right now. Okay, how do we know that? Okay, how many languages can you say tree in, Danny?
Just two.
Two. Okay, what are they? Okay,
German and English.
Okay, Baum, right?
Yeah, Baum. Good. Yeah.
Yeah, Arbre in French, Eitz in Hebrew. You know, you go through all the languages, and they're all different words for the same thing.
For the same. Image.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so linguistics, modern linguistics says that words are the language pool, okay, that we draw from is all arbitrary. It has no link to the thing. But here we have an essential link and a knowledge that Adam had. So naming motif, Danny, assumes authority and knowledge. After all, God renames people, right? It's like a divine prerogative. So we have production, creativity, authority, knowledge, power, dignity, and beauty of human form. All this stuff is before us. Gold, precious stones, aromatic spices, the two trees, all this together, rivers, mountains. Okay, that's where we really ought to really, really park ourselves there in paradise.
Yeah, okay. Good. Sounds good. Okay.
Motifs. Okay.
Motifs and Holy of Holies.
Yeah, that's right.
That's where I want to park myself.
Wasn't this fun?
It was. It was great. Thanks so much.
I mean, what else would you want to do, Danny? Just sit, you know, just sit here and talk about this stuff forever. We will. As long as we live, we'll keep on doing this.
That's right. Okay. Sounds good.
God bless you. Bye.
See you next time on Deep Dive into Scripture.
Thanks for listening. Please go to AncientHopes.org and the Deep Dive into Scripture link on that page for related text. You can find more episodes of this show on the WSJF podcast server or on the Apple and Spotify podcast services. See you next time when we take another deep dive into Scripture. Don't forget this week to open that Bible and dive right in.